When this happened, the boss had a laugh. He couldn't contain himself and he laughed, he burst out. When he burst out laughing, so his wife wanted to know, why did you burst out laughing? So he says, no, you don't have to worry about that, it doesn't relate to you. So she made a big fuss about the whole thing, you must tell me why you burst out laughing. Now he's in a problem, he's in a fix, that if anybody knows the language of the animals, then he must just keep quiet, can't divulge. If he divulges, then he dies. He can't divulge the secret. In the meanwhile, the wife is ranting and raving, making a big noise. You know, you have to divulge the secret. Where in the world you found that the husband and the wife don't disclose their secrets to each other? Where you found that in the world? You know, it must be called something, you're conspiring against me. And she made a big noise. Now he's parishan, he doesn't know what to do. He's running to and fro, coming out of the farmhouse, and going back, coming in and going, and she's on one foot, will have to tell me. In the meanwhile, the crow, the rooster is seeing all this. They are near their run, and the rooster is watching all this, and he's celebrating. The rest of the animals, they all in a very, very sympathetic mood, crying away, because they know this is a very tight situation. He's going to divulge and he's going to die. So they're very, very remorseful. They're very sorrowful about the whole thing. But the rooster, he's not sorrowful at all. He is celebrating. From one wall to the other wall, he's flying and he's crowing and he's flying and he's crowing and he's making a big noise. So the horse or someone asked him, can't you see all of us are in this mood? We are so sorrowful and with so much of distress. And you know the reason for the distress. Is it an occasion for you to be celebrating? So he says, why shouldn't I celebrate? You see me. I got 100 hens under me. And I smash anyone I want. Anyone, I just clam on. Anyone, anytime. I just smash them down. This man here, he's got only one wife. And that one wife is ruling over him. He is fit to be killed. He's fit to die, this man. He's not fit to be alive. One woman, and he can't control her. He is fit to die. Can't you say I've got 100 hens here? And the one I want, I just smash her down. Just push her down. And this is a story they got in one of these Arabic for beginners, this one story they've got. But these stories they include, and the stories have some moral. There is a moral behind it. There are numerous morals in this, but two great things. One is cooperation. You see, all these animals are cooperating. When there is a cooperation, then that community is progressive, this cooperation. So they will always progress. I got something, I want to share it with someone else. I got something, and I want to share it with someone else. Hazrat Rahmatullahi mentioned that there were two pious people. I don't know the names of those pious people. So he sees that contrary to his routine, he doesn't initiate the salam, he lets the sati initiate the salam. Like that, the standard is that the one who initiates the salam, his reward is greater. Now against the standard and against his routine, he allowed his sati to initiate the salam. So he had asked him, but this is not your routine. You normally initiate the salam. Today you have given me the chance to initiate the salam. What is the reason? So he says, all the time that I had seen myself initiating salam, I saw so much of nur descending upon me. So I thought to myself, why don't I allow my brother to have this blessing? The nur is descending on me. Can't I allow my brother to share of this as well? Or must I take everything myself? So this cooperation, even in dini works, any dini blessing, any dini goodness that we enjoy, then one is to keep it to yourself. And one is, all right, I got it, I am enjoying it. Let me share it with my brother as well. My brother, my partner, my sati, my friend. Let me share it with him as well. This was the style of the Sahaba Ikram, the famous incident in Yarmouk, where it's a Sahabi that is dying. He needs water. But he sees his sati that is also in a similar plight, and he says, no, take the water and pass it on to my brother. And that person, as the water reaches him, he sees his other sati is also in a similar plight, now pass the water to him, and carries on to the third person, fourth person. Now when he comes back and he sees everybody, everybody has passed away. So in every condition, يُؤْثِرُونَ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ وَلَوْ كَانَ بِهِمْ خَصَاصَ. The spirit is, let's share. Sharing is caring. Now they have to teach it in the schools. Before it was natural. We need to understand that we live in a capitalistic society. And after some time, our minds begin to go into that mold. That capitalistic society, it's got a certain ethos. The ethos is, we must control. We must be in influence. We must control. And everybody else, they must slave for us. The law of slavery is gone, finished. But as though they are enslaved to us, they are at our mercy for their work, for their occupation, for their homes, for their motor cars, for whatever other comfort they've got, they are enslaved to us. If they don't play the game, we will see to it that we will burn their homes, we will attach their cars, we will take it away from them. So they will be enslaved to us. Outwardly it would seem that they are free, but really they will be enslaved. So that is that mentality. Now, when we are living in a community, then sooner or later the ethos of that community begins to rub onto us. And we don't even realize that that thing is rubbing onto us. So this capitalistic attitudes begin to run into us, they rub onto us. Right? That same type of feeling, same type of thought, you know, the broad outlook what is of capitalism that begins to run into us. And each person begins to feel, no, I need a palatial home, I need a good house, and I need a good motor car, I need this type of holidays, I need this type of luxuries. And until I've got this luxuries, then I can't settle. I must get this, then I'll settle, then I'll get married. Now, this is a difficult life. It's a difficult life. Each person has to work. And that whole goal of that individual is that level of luxury. If he's got that level of luxury, then it will be said that he is leading a normal life. If he doesn't have that level of luxury, then he's not leading a normal life. So this is, in a nutshell, this is that capitalistic approach. Everybody else must be enslaved, and a few conglomerates, they must control the finance. See? Now, Islamic outlook is totally different. Islamic outlook is contentment, satisfaction, simplicity. That's the Islamic outlook. We read about this incident of Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas radiallahu ta'ala anhu. On the one end, He's such a great person. He's been promised Jannat in this life, number one. His du'as are all answered, number two. Number three, he's the dear uncle of Rasulullah Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Right. But his personal life is such, okay, he's walking the street and he finds a piece of leather or a piece of fat, whatever it must have been. He picks it up, he cleans it, washes it, dries it, and makes it into powder. And he says, Alhamdulillah, 3 days food has been sorted out. The food for 3 days has been sorted out. I can live over this, off this. So, as far as their personal life was concerned, a very simple, straightforward life, they didn't see the need to have a proper, organized investment to generate the income for them. Like how we see today, that I need some investment, that investment will generate some income, and I can live out of it. So, as far as their lifestyle, their livelihood was concerned, they were very simple. Now, for a moment, I don't say that we must apply that. First, become to the level of the Sahaba Kiram, and then experiment this thing. Don't just go into this. Because the fear is this, that if you just jump into this, you will not have the level of endurance that is required. When you don't have that level of endurance, then the little that you are doing, that also you'll leave out. So you need to come towards the Sahaba Ikram, but look at your capacity. Someone that has got a bicycle and he wants to go for Hajj, he can't go and imitate an aeroplane or a jet. No, let me go and imitate the jet. See, the jet, the thing flies. So he goes on the top of a mountain and he wants to fly. He'll fly to death, isn't it? So he's got a capacity of a bicycle. He must move accordingly. You got the capacity of a jet, then you move accordingly. So we need to all move, but what's the irony is that we don't know the outlook. The outlook must be that original outlook. And every coming day must bring us closer to that outlook. Sahaba Ikram and Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, how they did it, how they worked it. And how do we go about doing it? What happens nowadays is that the outlook is different. See, one is our outer appearance. Now, the tragedy is this, that we confine our deen to our outer appearance. A few little outer appearance, and we confine our entire deen to that. But the outlook is totally different. The outlook is like this. Alright, this family here, they go out for a holiday every 3-4 months. They go to the Bergs, they go here, there, whatever. And once a year, once in 2 years, they go out for Umrah. Right? And they've got a 4x4. Now, our outlook also becomes the same. Whether Hafiz Sahab, Mulana Sahab, or someone that is in doing any other dini work, Jamaat, whatever. Now your outlook becomes the same. He is doing this. And this is where I need to reach. I must also go to the Bergs. I must have a timeshare. And I must have a little bit of a holiday and a break. And every year or second year, I must also go out for Umrah. And I must have a 4x4. So that becomes the outlook. These type of people will come to us. People that are living in that luxury bracket, they will come to us for advice. Now we have to be very, very careful when they come to us. We have to do two things. As far as their lifestyle is concerned, we'll have to gradually push Islam into them. All right, but you're going there, see that you read your namaz, don't miss out your namaz. Or you're going to that Berg's, no, it's nice, very nice, go there. It's nice to be in solitude for some moments so you can remember Allah Ta'ala in solitude. وَرَجُنْ ذَكَرَ اللَّهَ خَالِيًا. So, in total solitude, you'll be remembering Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, mashallah, go there. Right? You see that you do your namaz, and then make additional zikr because it's a place of solitude. And then, but don't forget that do some kitab reading as well. Whilst you're around there, then do some kitab reading as well. And if there's any other Muslim around, then speak to him also. So now, in the lifestyle that he is, you gave him some Islam. But that doesn't mean that you must imitate that lifestyle. No, in that lifestyle of his, you push in some Islam. But you don't want to imitate him. See? Because he's already gone in that direction. To reverse him, one shot is going to be difficult. But where are you going? Burgs and all, they're wasting your money. Kuffar style life and all. So now that's going to be difficult. You're not going to extract him from that one shot. It's going to take time before he'll change, right? But in that lifestyle that he is now pushing some Islam, so that when he's there, he doesn't go deeper into guna. But he's there now, and there's free time available. So there is some type of cheap woman, so he's flirting around with them. And there is music, and he's there as well. And there is some type of a porn occasion that's going on. Immoral things are going on, some show, woman, whatever. He's not attending all these type of things. Or he's doing his holiday and he's coming back. In the same manner, the other type of people, people that are free-minded, he's not mixing with them. See? So you're telling him all what he must do, that in that environment he must secure himself and come back. Otherwise, the chances are that he goes there and he comes back worse. There are cases where people went for these type of holidays and one person landed with the next person's wife. Happens, they got married, everything happened. And in this same type of environment, loose, easy, very, very relaxed environment, they're going with good intentions, going to relax, going to cool off a little bit because we are very stressed with our work conditions, we are very stressed, so we need a little bit of a break, all right? Then they're going two, three friends because if it's just one person, one couple, it will look very, very boring. So you got your children, I got my children. Then in the end of the holiday, this person comes back with that person's wife. You see? So this type of things do happen. Sometimes if you're not careful in this type of environment, then people that have been living very sober and clean lives, they getting mixed up in wrong things. They're experimenting with drugs. That also happens. Now you mixed up with that person has got these habits. Now you've got a long day to pass, or long days to pass, 10 days to pass there. And that person is inviting you. And now how do you resist? If you're going to resist, then it won't be in the flavor of the company. Companionship will grow, will go. What do I do? So I compromise my standards. In the meanwhile, then you get addicted to what he's already been addicted. Now you come back, and you come back all broken in pieces. In such pieces that you can't put the pieces together again. So that person, you don't imitate his outlook. You don't imitate his outlook. Yes, in that outlook, in that lifestyle of his, you try and put in Islam, as much Islam as you can. And gradually, then you try and rope him. But you're doing this, mashallah, very good. How about trying going out in Jamaat now and then, occasionally? All right. You can't go for 40 days, you can't go for one chilla, or you can't go for 4 months. Then try for 3 days, go with a little bit of a mastura Jamaat, so you will have the company of your wife as well. And just for a trial, just go and try it out. You don't have to go and commit yourself that every month you'll be going out for 3 days. Just as a trial, why don't you just go for 3 days? Maybe you will see something closer. Maybe you will have an experience of your lifetime, you know. Just go and try it out. So you brought him closer, and then you're turning him, you see. You brought the man closer, and then now you're turning him. Now he sees that, so he says, "Now, I didn't know that this Jamaat thing was like this. I didn't know it was like this." But gradually, his whole thinking begins to change now. He thought that this was the ultimate. Right? Now you bring him, and you bring him gradually, you bring him on the other line. If he's not too much for Jamaat, then khanka. Something from the things that are available in our community, right? Things that are available in our community, we need to take cognizance, right? In our community, in our South African context, then approximately 90-95% of the time, that women are calling the shots, right? In our homes, they call the shots. In our finances, they call the shots. the holidays, they prepare them, they program the holidays, everything is programmed by them, right? Holidays, weekends, everything they organize. Up to the clothing that you're going to wear, they will tell you what you're going to wear, right? So everything is all sorted out by them. You don't have a say. You don't have too much of a say. So now you need to understand that this is the type of life that we are leading. When we are leading this type of life, then that engine of mind has to come right. Then the house will work right. But the engine is off. The engine is going on the wrong direction. And I'm just following. I'm just the coach. So I have to get that engine right. How do I get the engine right? So now you have to see from the formulas that are available in your context, what formula can you apply so that this whole train can go right? Right? Is there a formula available for you and for your family? That if they get onto that formula, then there will be formula one then. There will be formula one, then they'll be going on the right. Is there anything available? Be realistic. Be realistic. If there isn't anything else, then go in this Jamaat line or something. But bring some change. We need to look. A Muslim must be always alert. That if I am on this track today, sabiqu, I need to excel. When I need to excel, then I'm on this line now. And I can see that if I'm going to just be complacent, then I'm not going to make any progress. Because it is this woman that rules this home. So how do I get them right? If I'm going to just go to take them for Umrah and come back, then each time that I go to Umrah, they will know Bin Dawood more than myself. That's what they learn. Or Bin Dawood. Uncle Dawood. Eh? America, they got Uncle Sam, yeah, this Uncle Dawood. Right? So they'll know and they'll teach me how to go and trade in your jewelry and where you must go and what price will get here, what price will get there and what is the latest abaya with the latest designs and all that. They will show you all that. So the whole outlook of Islam will be mutilated, absolutely mutilated. One professor was here some 6 months ago, 6-7 months ago. So very thought-provoking question he asked. So he asked me, Maulana, what is the purpose of an abaya? Now I became suspicious because this man is not just asking what is the purpose, there's something behind this, you see. Because he's an educated person and he's asking what is the purpose behind an abaya. So I asked him, do you mind if I ask you why you're asking that question? He says, no. So now I'm asking because that abaya presently that is running, that is in the market, that is in vogue today, it's so attractive that it's on the point of intimidating you. It's become so attractive. So what is the purpose of that abaya? If the abaya is to move away people, you know, to distract people, then the present abaya requires another abaya. That's what his words were. Then the present abaya requires another abaya. Because that is all made up. When it's made up, it's going to attract anybody. When it's going to attract anybody, then it's not serving the purpose. When it's not serving the purpose, I'll need my wife to put on another abaya so that she's safe from all these type of attractions. You see? So this is what I'm saying, that if we are going to be complacent, and that whole outlook of deen is going to be changed. But then, if you're going in a group, whether in Jamaat or whatever it is, even in Umrah, whatever, we need to be selective and careful in what Jamaat we're going, what group we're going. See, when there's an abundance of anything, then you need to be selective and you need to be careful. In every department, every place, nowadays, you know, there's going to be an element of wrong. There's going to be an element of evil. The madrasa, khanqa, jamaat, there's going to be an element of wrong. And mind you, tell me which home doesn't have an element of wrong. They will not tell you, right, which street doesn't have an element of wrong, which home doesn't have an element of wrong. They're going to have it. Some are going to have more, and some are going to have less. But there's going to be an element of wrong now. Because of the floods of evil. This is not evil. Evil is not just coming in drips and drabs now. Now it's coming in floods. So when it's coming in floods, so now you have to be very careful. Are you going to correct yourself? When you're going to correct yourself, now I need to see which type of group I'm going to join in. Sometimes a person comes to a madrasa, he can get spoiled, he can come even worse. He goes to a khanqah, he can get even worse. In a jamaat, he can spoil himself. A simple situation. One person is earning a simple salary, say 3,000 rand is earning, right? So he has one dish for the day, he has just one type, one dish he has. Now, unfortunately or fortunately for him, he is joined up in a jamaat of millionaires that have 20 workers for them and that have 15 varieties every day. So he's joined up with them. So now this side, there's 10 people that are so wealthy, and this person is leading a very simple, like simplistic life. While they'll be in Jamaat, they'll be speaking about the 6 points, Ikram-e-Muslim. Ikram-e-Muslim, to honor the Muslim, to prefer him over yourself, etc., to be good, to be kind, to be compassionate. Now he's listening to this. But the wealthy will listen to it and say, the right recipient is this brother of ours here. Right? Now, in the jamaat, for that 40 days or 4 months that they are going out, then all the ikram they will be making to this poor person, the 15 dishes that they are eating, they'll share it with him. In the meanwhile, he is used to eating one dish. When he comes back home, he says to his wife, "You are nonsense, up to nothing. Here, those people appreciate me, 15 dishes I eat every day. And I got workers, you know, all the khadims, they come and make khidmat for me. Yeah, no khidmat, and one meal. One meal a day, only Allah Ta'ala to obey." See, so now, for this person, this experience is not going to be good. It's not going to be good at all. Now he's going to fight with his wife. He's going to be complaining. He's going to come with a different approach. Now he needs to be put into a jamaat with people that are of his like, that his standard. See? That is why when they talk about nikah, and they say that nikah must be done with someone that you're compatible. Nikah must be done with someone with your match. And the reason is simple. The reason is, you know, say for example, now you're talking of the olden days, right? A girl is coming from a background of a perfumer. Perfumer's home, right? And for some reason, she fell in love with a butcherman's son, you know. Olden days, you know, that butcherman, as he's coming home, he's all smelling ojri and paya and what the works, his hands are all messed up. That girl, in the first day, she's going to feel nauseous, she's going to throw up. She won't be able to take it. As much as she loves her, but say, this is not on. So, that marriage was not to break, it was to join. But this is going to end up in breakage. So they say, you know, you be compatible, agreeable with the type of person. She's a butcherman, a butcherman's daughter, and you a butcherman's daughter, now they can agree. Because she's experiencing the same thing. Father is coming, it's all messed up. Blood, and some ojri, and some paya, and some this, whatever it is. So, father is messed up, husband is messed up, so they will be able to take it. But if they're not of the same, then they can't. They won't be able to blend in. See. Lately now, we have this experience in the madrasa also. Someone comes and he goes worse. Right? So that the problem is with the individual himself. Now I say you're going to have a mixed baggage. So the individual that is coming into a jamaat or into a madrasa or khanqah, he has to be selective of the company that he takes. He must be very selective. And when I say selective, he mustn't offer himself a second chance. One time is enough. All right, I've been with this person here, and I saw that my time is getting wasted. Right? Or we're talking on topics, my mind is drifting away from the cause. Because he's talking of such things now. that the mind began to drift. Right? As we were there in the Khanqah or in Jamaat now, and he began to show me the features that he's got on his phone. So I thought to myself that I lost out. For so many years I lost out. I need to get those features. You see now, that one sitting, was it beneficial or was it harmful? That one sitting was not beneficial, it was harmful. He doesn't know his limits. He went and take all those features and he's now then experimenting. The man that was leading a clear, clean life, now his life is all torn apart. See, so now this can happen in a madrasa, it can happen in a khanka, it can happen in a jamaat, anywhere it can happen. So the important thing in this day and time is that you have to select your company. And as I say, the one time you have slipped, then don't give yourself a second chance. Don't go and try it out and again, let me just sit with him, let's see what happens. Because you will be keep slipping and falling up, standing up, slipping and standing up. Now you're getting punctures all the time. So there's no movement, there's no progress. Right? You got a puncture now, you understand what was the reason for the puncture and avoid that. But you're allowing yourself to be damaged all the time, then there's no progress in that. So even in the Khanqah in this day and time, you need to be very, very selective. Very, very selective of what you're doing. Who you're sitting with, who you're having meals with, who's around you, who's not around you, what is the thing that is being discussed. All that has to be seen. Right? And then you have a group, then you know you are moving and you're moving positively. There'll be just a handful of people who know their limits. Just a handful of people. Otherwise, the majority of the people get influenced. Small little talk, small little discussion, and their minds just go from one end to the other end. It's just a small little minority who are very, very mature, very strong, very strong-willed, very determined, you know, very strong in every respect, that don't get moved. But otherwise, the majority gets affected. So when you make a rule based on the majorities. You know, that is the majority getting affected with this or not? Are most of the people getting affected with this or not? Like you see, when there's a plague or something, there may be a few people that are not affected at all. You don't pass the law on that. You pass on the law on what? On the majority, that this area is plagued. So anybody comes here, they need to immunize themselves. So you base the law on a majority. So the same now, you have to base the law on a majority system. Okay, see, once I get affected, once I'm bitten with this, then I can't offer myself a second chance. Then I need to see, all right, I will just have to avoid this, whether I like it or not. Eating time, or what, whichever time. I can't be pulling up my face. I can't be rude. I can't be aggressive. But yes, with respect, I move away. Azaji rahmatullahi explained this. You know, in our dua kunut, we say, وَنَخْلَعُ مَنْ يَفْجُرُكُ وَنَتْرُكُ وَنَخْلَعُ مَنْ يَفْجُرُكُ. We leave those that disobey you, O Allah Ta'ala. We separate from those that disobey you. نَخْلَعُ. The word that Allah Pak has used is نَخْلَعُ. The root word is خُلَع. And خُلَع is a situation in a marriage where there is no harmony in the marriage. They can't just get along. There's no compatibility. So the wife makes an offer to the husband that, you see, the mehr that you're supposed to give me, in the Eastern countries, they don't give a cash mehr. Right? They give the mehr sometimes on death and sometimes on a separation. So the wife makes an offer to the husband, see, there's no compatibility in this marriage. There's no sanity that's in this marriage. What I will do is that mahar that you're supposed to give me, you take that mahar, keep that mahar, and just free me of this nikah. That is the one situation. The other situation is where there is a divorce, where the divorce is effective, but the Quran Sharif says, when you're separating, وَلِلْمُطَلَّقَاتِ مَتَاعٌ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. Right. So the husband, one is, this is being initiated from the wife, and one is where it is being initiated by the husband. where he's being initiated by the husband, the husband is also advised that when you are separating from this woman, and you have resolved, you are going that way, then let this separation go in a very sweet way. Give some gifts to her, and let it go not with bitterness, not with bad memories, but in a sweet, sweet way. وَلِلْمُطَلَّقَاتِ مَطَاعٌ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ Right? Like you see, up till now, amongst the Arabs, they don't mind that separation. They don't mind divorce. Women also don't mind. The husbands also don't mind. They live a couple of years, 10, 20 years, and they don't mind a separation. The reason is this, that the culture is a little bit different to our culture. One is this, that at the time of separation, the wife is given a couple of millions. So she knows she feels secure, right? And number two, there is that type of polygamous marriages there. So she's going to be separated and reunited just now again. So they don't feel that feeling of insecurity like how we would feel it. We feel very insecure. What's going to happen? How the house is going to run? And what will people say? And the community, how they will look down upon us? So these are the things that our minds work on. Their culture is slightly different. So what Hazari was getting at here was that when we see that in our deen, we'll have to make compromises, right? We're going to be slipping. We're not going to become stronger. We're not going to become better in any respect in our deeni aspects. Then we need to move away from that person. But that moving away must be done respectfully, not with aggression, not rude, not with bitterness. You smile and you move away. You don't have to be very thick with the person. Meet the person when you have to meet him. Assalamu alaikum. How are you? One, two words, you exchange and you moved on. He moved on and you moved on. But now you have that type of bond and that affinity. Obviously that affinity requires some compromises. He's got a thing going on. He's got his daughter's marriage going on, right? And he calls you. And you can't refuse. That marriage is going on in a hall. And the hall, there is video going on. There is mixing of the sexes there as you have it normally, right? Now if you don't attend, then you will be an outcast or he doesn't attend. You attend, then you're compromising some of your deen. Then what's the option? What do you do? So this comes because you feel that I need to maintain and respect that relationship. Now you're respecting the relationship, but then you are disrespecting the law of Allah Ta'ala. If you're respecting the relationship, then you are disrespecting the law of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. What's the option? So this is what you're reading in your dua kunut. وَنَخْلَعُ وَنَتْرُكُ مَنْ يَفْجُرُكُ Simple dua. You're saying you are renewing that agreement with Allah Ta'ala every day. You know, you've got an agreement with Allah Ta'ala, a pact with Allah Ta'ala every day. And your witr namaz is reading. وَنَخْلَعُ وَنَتْرُكُ مَنْ يَفْجُرُكُ Whoever transgresses, then Allah Ta'ala, I keep away from him. But then you renew and refreshen that agreement with Allah Ta'ala, and the moment you step out of the masjid again, you're back to square one. Here in your namaz, you're saying, Allah Ta'ala, I leave those people. Outside the masjid, again, you're same with the same crowd again. So it's like a joke then that your namaz is not a real namaz. Your claims that you make are not real claims. What commitments you're giving to Allah Ta'ala are not commitments. You know, when what you are saying to Allah Ta'ala, that's a commitment. You've got a commitment, then you honor your commitment. On the one side, you're saying, Allah Ta'ala, no, I leave these people. That was like a commitment. And then when you go out and you break the commitment, then that's a joke. So that's why I say that in all movements of deen nowadays, it's going to be very important that we be selective. See the type of people, see the crowd, see the association. Right? You're not going to look at that, then you're going to fall down. Either you're going to fall down, you're going to compromise, or the other wrong will be that you will say, no, I'm still better. I don't do these things here. Right? I can see these people, they miss out their namaz, or they don't read their sunnats. At least I bring my sunnats. So you will not improve yourself. You will just keep yourself steady. They're not doing the sunnats, I'm bringing my sunnats, I'm still better. Yes, you need to move with the crowd, with the people that are slightly better than you. Oh, they are not only particular about the sunnats, they're particular about the mustahab. they fast also Mondays and Thursdays, they keep rozas. And they're very careful, very cautious in their speech. You don't see them engaging any vulgarity or any aggressive speech. So see how they talk. I need to be with these people. I need to be with this crowd of people. See, some people, they don't have it in them. They don't know what is good manners. Not that they want to be vulgar and aggressive, but they don't have it. Normally, the Pathan crowd, they are a little bit more courageous, more strong, more courageous. They're more bold. What they want to say, they just do it. So one Pathan, his wife had died, so he remarried. Young girl he married. She's about 15, 16. So one day she began to complain that your sons don't call me Amma, you know. They don't call me Ma. So in a fit of a rage, he says, Ye kon hai aapko Amma kehne wale nahi? Ye kon hote hai? कि आपको अम्मा नहीं कहते उनसे अम्मा कहलवाऊंगा उनके बाप से अम्मा कहलवाऊंगा सो ही सेज हू इज दिस चिल्ड्रन ऑफ माइंस दैट आई एम नॉट कॉलिंग यू अम्मा आई विल एंश्योर दैट दे कॉल यू अम्मा आई विल मेक द फादर मेक कॉल यू अम्मा सी सो दिस वल्गैरिटी यू हैव सम पीपल हैव दैट दे आर अग्रेसिव इन देयर वेज द नेचर द टॉक एटसेट्रा. Now you associate with them, you join up with them. You don't realize it, but in a very short duration, you pick up that type of aggressive speech. You become vulgar. That is because of that association. So now, what you need to see is not just that person that you will be complacent with. No, that is better. He's better than you. How does he conduct himself? And in tight situations, you know, in serious, tight situations, how do they conduct themselves? How do they speak? Now, there's a lot of things for us to learn. There's a lot of things for us to learn. In Lucknow, then these type of values are passed on to the children, very small little children. But the choice of the words are very right, correct words, respectable words. Yunus Sahib Rahmatullah says, okay, there was a court appearance and the opposition says, you know, whatever it is, but really I take my hat out for my opposition. The opposition says, I take my hat out for my opponent. Because I was speaking a lie, it was a made up story. But then see how he counted. He counted me like this. Bhai dekho, tumhari baat khilaaf-e-sadaqat hai. He didn't say, you know, you are outright liar. This is total, wholesale lying. He didn't say that. See, this is untrue. It makes a difference, isn't it? Once I say that, you know, this is absolute false. It's absolute lies. And this, khilaf sadaqat, this doesn't sound to be true. Now, it's different. You're saying the same thing, but you're saying it with respect. You're saying the same thing without being vulgar, without being aggressive. The message, you're not mixing up, you're not mincing up your words. What is, you know, mincing up your words? That's wrong. Mincing up your words, that's wrong. That is not something that the Shariat condones. You know, it is a mashwara, and one person is giving a suggestion, and you can see that suggestion is completely out. So we can't despise him, but we can't support the wrong suggestion. What he's saying is true. No, but we'll do this. But that's not right. You're being ambiguous. You're mincing up your words. You'd rather tell him that this doesn't sound to be the best thing. Doesn't sound to be the right thing. And this is the reason why it doesn't sound to be right. And this is how we're supposed to be doing things. But to be mincing words, that's not right. You don't mince up the words just to respect the person. So you see this. وَنَخْلَعُ وَنَتْرُكُ مَنْ يَفْجُرُكُ. How important it is not to associate with the wrong class of people. And as I say, in this day and age, there's an abundance of evil influence, you know, evil influences that really push a person down. And wherever you're going, those influences are there with you. So you have to be very selective, very, very careful as to which group of people you are going to be moving with. They'll shape your mind, they'll shape your thinking, they'll shape your lifestyle. Everything is shaped because of the crowd that you are moving with. Where you were a simpleton, you were contented, you were living a comfortable life, now they'll put you into a problematic life. You see that, how it starts off. The Mu'tami Sahib Rahmatullah gives an incident. One person had become very wealthy, extremely wealthy. So the village people saw this person is, he's, you know, going way beyond us. He's going, really going way beyond us. Where we were earning 10 and 20 rupees, now he's earning 100,000 a month he's earning. So he's really way beyond us. Now he's going to excel everything. So he will be such a prominent person, such a influential person, that we don't feature anywhere near him. Now, how to get him? You see, you get this class of people, how to get this person back, you know, cut his feet and bring him back to size. So they wait for an occasion until his daughter is now about to get married. So when his daughter is about to get married, so they pretend to be cooperating for the marriage arrangements, you know. Marriage now, so they pretend now, they're all friends. So they pretend to now cooperate, assist in the marriage arrangements. And in that now, they got a plan already worked out. And let him spend through his nose, you know. Let him spend millions, not 1 million, millions. To the point that now, he must fall into debts. All his properties must all get attached, you know. So they really did it. And when they saw him now totally broken down and insolvent, now they are celebrating. Now, mashallah, he's back to normal. He's on our level, our footing. So they get back this friendship, this type of friendship, they get back to you, they get back to you in a very difficult way. In a very, very deceiving way. Yeah. You see, but you don't realize it until when you don't fall. Until then you don't realize it. Until then you say, no, I can't be living a life of isolation and all that. Now, you look at the present norm, the, you know, normal person throughout the world, you'll find he's living through the blessings of the bank, isn't it? Bond, interest, usury. The normal person, he's got nothing left. Before the month can end, he needs to pay this installment, that installment, and he's wiped out before the month can end. This is how the life has been shaped. How the life has been shaped like this? Because of company environment. That environment has such an impact on him that he has to behave like that. He doesn't behave like that, he doesn't fit in the circle. He needs to have his house like that. And to get the house like that, to get the motor car, he needs money. And how is he going to get money? Go back to the bank. So he falls into that same chakkar. That's why they got that, you know, debt slave. They talk about a debt slave. So you are enslaved because of your debts. This is that whole philosophy that you are a slave because of your debts. So, our Islamic outlook is totally different. And I say today in this age, the biggest obstruction is association, company, environment. That's the biggest obstruction. As Aziz Rahman used to say it numerous times, says, you know, generally Muslims, they are good in the individual capacity, they are very good. If you separate them from the association, separate them from the environment, etc., then in the individual self, they are very good. But then it is the company, it is the association, it is the type of people that they mix up with, that then blend their thinking, that fashion their thinking, change them completely, put them off the course. It is the type of people. Otherwise, in his individual self, separating from the environment, he's an excellent individual. This is the thing that confuses him, that complicates his life. So now we have got two options. Like the hadith says, you'll get, you know, in the time of fitna, you'll get two options how to save yourselves. One is a three point plan that was explained early on by Ibn Amir radiallahu anhu hadith. And this is another plan, then how do you save yourself at the time of fitna? It's corruption, confusion, and wholesale. It's, you know, waves upon waves, tides upon tides of confusion. So one of two ways that he speaks about. One is, a man has got his horse, and wherever there is a call for jihad, or going out in the path of Allah Ta'ala, then he is going out in that direction. And the other option that the hadith shows, is a man takes his flock of sheep or goats, and goes to a mountain top, worships Allah Ta'ala, and ends his life in that way. Right? Now, the wording in this hadith is not the object. It's not the words that, you know, you got your horse and you're looking for a direction for jihad and you're moving. In other words, what it means here is, you are not complacent. Right? Wherever you see now, there is a need for sabdini khidmat, you are going. Wherever dini service is required of you, you are moving in that direction. Whichever type of dini khidmat is required, and you feel that you will be safe in that environment, so you're moving there. It needs you to be here, you're moving there. It needs you to be there, you're moving there. So you're not stationary in one place. Right? Wherever deen requires you to be, you are moving. So that's the one way to save yourself. Right? And the second way of saving yourself is, you know, you've got some type of an investment, and the thing is rolling, and you separated people. Because now it's such a mixed baggage, now you can't distinguish who's right, who's wrong. You can't distinguish who's right, who's wrong. It's so difficult. Sometimes for the year the person is right. After 1-2 years then you discover, no, he's got such evil elements in him. You can't distinguish the person straight away. You only get to know the person after a year, after 2 years. In the meanwhile you have messed things for yourself. So now, when it's become so difficult, then you move away. Yafirru bidinihi. Now you move away. Say, no, let me just do my own thing. You're living in Spingo, wherever you're living, but you are living a life of isolation, solitude. And you're not mixing up with people. Not that people are evil, but that you don't mess up yourself. You don't mess up yourself, so you're living separately. You're not mixing, you're not interacting, just for your own survival. You know, because if you're going to interact and mix up, then sooner or later you're going to get involved in some problem or the other. So for your own safety and for your own deen, you just kept away from people. So now these are the two options that the hadith gives you in such times where there is a flood. You know, the floodgates of fitna are just pushing one way, pushing left, right and center. Man is so good and suddenly just there's a change in his life. So now this hadith shows you these two ways. So this is one way. So you see some good group of people or some good khidmat that is going on. Right? So you move with them, provided the ethos generally overall is good, and you see they're moving in the right direction, so you're moving with them. Now you sit for i'tikaf, or you're in jamaat, whatever it is. You're seeing overall the thing is right, so you're moving with them. Right? That's the one way where a person can't manage to be isolated. You know, some people, they become very afraid of isolation. They're all by themselves, they become very afraid. Or they become depressed. Now they can't manage that isolation. Then they go with some group, but then they examine that group. What is the type of the group? How is the Islamic ethos within them? Values within them? Then they move with them. So that is for that person who can't be on his own. And the other person who can't manage crowds and all, if he's going to be with crowds and all that, he's going to mess himself. He won't be able to take it. Or he will spoil. He'll be spoiled himself. Then you go your own self. Separate the crowd. But with the intention that you'll get spoiled, not that they will spoil you. Why with that intention? The reason is that if you have the intention of they will spoil me, then you will be having that attitude of holier than thou. I am very pious, and these people are going to spoil me. So you don't have that approach. No, no. I don't have the resistance, I don't have the knowledge, I don't have the experience, and I don't know that I'll get messed up or not. I'm weak, I may just spoil those people there. So rather I keep away from the whole crowd. Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.
Bismillah. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Today we'll discuss few aspects with regards to miras and inheritance. As far as the importance of miras and distributing and winding up the estate is concerned, then one can understand it from the Quran Majid itself. This is one of the very few ahkam and injunctions which has been explained in somewhat detail in the Quran Majid compared to other ahkam and compared to other laws of the Shariat. As far as the winding up of the estate is concerned and distributing the inheritance, then this should be done as quick as possible, as soon as possible, and one should not prolong it and delay it, as this will lead to much more problems and much more quarrels and disputes. Although legally it might take some time as far as transferring the names, etc., but as far as the Shari'i distribution is concerned, that this person will get so much of the estate, this person will get this amount, and this should be done as soon as possible in order to save oneself from falling into any type of difficulty and any type of problems. Then when it comes to an estate, you will find that normally there are several problems that are quite common, that there might be a situation that where a father might be having a business or a company, and he might have several sons, he might have several daughters, but there are just few sons that might be assisting him in that business, and his other sons might be having some other profession, or they might be on their own. Now when the father passes away, now the problem comes about, now those sons that were assisting the father, they will feel that they are entitled to a much larger share compared to those brothers or those sisters that had not assisted in that business, because they feel that it was through the sweat of their brow that that business had improved and they had become prosperous. Now over here the dispute starts, that they demand an extra share. So within the father's lifetime, that if he can foresee that this might be a problem after I pass away, so one solution to this would be that within his lifetime, he sells a share of the business to those sons of his, to make them partners, so that at least when he passes away, they will be secured and have their own share of that business. That, for example, he sells to one son 20% of that business. So now when he passes on, so it will only be 80% of that business that will be distributed in the inheritance, 20% will still belong entirely to the son that was part of that business. Or sometimes what might happen is that in an estate, the father during his lifetime, he might have just by word have mentioned to one of his children that I have given this property to you as a gift, or this car to you as a gift. But the father hasn't disclosed this to any of his other heirs, or to his wife, or to his other children. So this will also lead to some problem, that after the father passes away, so this child will come up and say that this property actually belongs to me. It doesn't form part of the estate. So the solution to this is also that now the father should make it clear to the other heirs or to the other people, or have it in writing, that this belongs solely to this person. But another problem also arises here, is that if this is some movable property or some item which a person can take physical possession of, but the father just by word of mouth just said to the son that this is yours, but he hadn't granted physical possession of it to that son, so the son doesn't become the owner of that item. For example, the father says that this car is yours, but for the rest of the father's life, the father was still driving the car and the son had no control over it. Now when the father passes away, the son comes up and says that this car belongs to me, because the father said he handed it over to me. So the son cannot assume ownership of it, because during the father's lifetime, it was necessary for him to take complete possession and complete control of that car. Then only will we say that he has become the owner of that car, and then will he be entitled to it. Otherwise, it will form part of the estate and it will be distributed. Then sometimes in the home, there might be certain items or certain things that upon the demise of that father, etc., or the parent, nobody knows really that who does it belong completely to. That is it, does it belong to the mother? Does it belong to the father? That, for example, someone might have given a gift. Now the father, for example, the mother passes away. Now the father cannot remember whether the gift was given to him, whether the gift was given to his deceased wife. So that is why the advice is given that while during their lifetime, an inventory, a list should be made up, that those items which possibly could be a problematic area after our demise, that we should clearly mention that this belongs to the husband, this belongs to the wife, etc., so that upon their demise, we'll be able to clearly understand what belongs to who. Then upon the demise of a person, there are a few requirements or fundamental things that need to be need to take place in that estate. At first is covering of funeral expenses. So as far as funeral expenses are concerned, that is, when you say funeral expenses, then this refers to the kafan and the digging of the qabr, etc. Then this will be fulfilled from the estate of the deceased. If someone, some other relative from his own side wishes to pay, then there will be no problem. But one of the requirements, one of the duties is that first, this will be paid from the estate. Then second, if the mayit has any debts, he has incurred debts during his lifetime and he still hasn't paid his creditors, then this will be paid from his estate. Even if the debts amount to the entire value of the estate and this leaves the heirs without any inheritance, then to the first the debts will be paid off. And if there is anything that is left, then only will we move on to the next step. And the next step after the debts is the wasiyat and the bequest that the mayit has made. And the bequest that a mayit makes can only be up to 1/3 of the estate. He cannot make a bequest or several bequests which will amount to more than 1/3 of the estate. And if he has made several bequests that amount to more than 1/3 of the estate, then to solve this problem, you will give a proportionate amount to each bequest. A person, for example, if he owned 3,000 rands and he made a bequest that 500 rand should go to person A, 500 rand should go to person B, and 500 rand should go to person C. So all in all, the bequest amounts to half of the estate, more than 1/3. So in order to solve this problem, we'll give a proportionate amount to each one of them. That is 333 rands to one person, 333 rands to one person. So in this way, each person will be getting a proportionate amount and the bequest will be coming out from 1/3 of the estate. And the last step in the inheritance is distributing the inheritance amongst the heirs. And this will be done according to the laws of Sharia. Even if a person during his lifetime says that, for example, my wife should receive half of my estate, this will have no will hold no weight whatsoever, because whatever the law of Sharia is, that for example, the wife in the presence of children, she can only receive 1/8 of the estate, so this is what she will be entitled to. She cannot receive anything more. And in the case of debts, if the person's debts are much more than what he has left behind, for example, his estate only comes amounts up to 100,000 and he has debts of 150,000. So the 100,000 of the estate will be used to pay off the debts, and the remaining 50,000, that is not the responsibility of the heirs. If any one of the heirs wishes to absolve the deceased parent, or whoever it may be, of the debt, then it will be just be an act of kindness and an act of ihsan from their side. But that extra that is surplus and much more than what the estate has, that is not the responsibility of the heirs. That will just be as if a forgotten debt, and it will be upon the mayit that on the day of Qiyamah, that is when that true hisab kitab will take place, and that remaining debt will be paid off.